Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Paul Gallant. Join the conversation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776.
There's different philosophies in ownership. You know what I mean? Some owners kind of stay away and don't engage a whole lot. Other owners do. And his philosophy is he's going to engage. And listen, it's only been a short experience, but it's been a really good experience. It hasn't been fun. You know, it's not fun. Those meetings aren't, I wouldn't characterize them as fun meetings. But those meetings make me better, and I trust they make us better.
That was the voice of former Panthers head coach Frank Reich talking about his relationship with owner David Tepper in October. It hasn't been fun, but it's been good. Interesting comments from a coach who was fired just 11 games into the year. That is the shortest stint for any first-year head coach since 1978. Some guy that I've never heard of, Pete McCauley, the 49ers hired him, and they fired him after 9 games. This was before Bill Walsh. This was before the 49ers took over. I'm not sure if Walsh was the guy who stepped in the next year. All I know is, Sean, that I had never heard of Pete McCauley, and that's the only guy who's had a shorter first year than Frank Reich. And this is a conversation that includes former Jaguars head coach Urban Meyer.
That was what I was going to say. It's shocking to me that whatever Frank Reich did got him fired faster than everything that Urban Meyer did.
Yeah.
That eventually got him fired in 2021. Also, Nate Hackett also survived longer than...
How did Hackett survive?
Like, it's crazy. This is the that is the last 2 years. The last 3 years we've had someone fired under, what, 14 games, I think, Urban
right.
was?
Here's the thing. This idea that Reich was going to figure it out is total crap. It's crap. When had Reich ever shown you in Indianapolis that he was special while running a team? And they threw quarterback after quarterback after quarterback at him. And the excuse I guess you could make is, well, they were all 40 years old and about to retire. Matt Ryan, Philip Rivers, etc. And Andrew Luck, of course, walked away. But what had he ever done? It's a largely uninspiring hire that the Panthers made, outside of the fact that Reich played for the expansion Panthers back in 1995. It's really the only cutesy piece of this story. So there's a lot of people that are playing sad little violins for Reich, and maybe it's because there is an idea that meddlesome owner David Tepper, who sounded rather meddlesome there when you heard that comment by Frank Reich, he wanted Bryce Young and they wanted C.J. Stroud. We saw, courtesy of Josh McCown's mother, a liked tweet by her. Some of you people have no life. We thank you for your service to Paul Gallant Show content. But Josh McCown's mom, Josh McCown, almost Houston Texans coach, was the Panthers, what, quarterback coach? Offensive coordinator? Quarterback coach. He got canned as well. Texans? Huh? A tweet. Watch the Josh McCown UD QB series, then watch the Panthers QB search videos on their YouTube. I always got the feeling the coaches wanted Stroud and the owners wanted Young. Yeah, Josh McCown was talking about playing horse with C.J. Stroud. It was a rather awkward conversation. McCown was trying to seem hip with his Ivan Drago spiked up hair. But hey, I do think that the Panthers coaching staff liked C.J. Stroud over Bryce Young. And that brings us to the conversation that I wanted to have. David Tepper, owner of the Carolina Panthers, does seem rather meddlesome and like someone who still is learning on the job, thinks he knows everything because this is a successful businessman. This is a guy who likes to talk about stuff. Remember, there was a couple of weeks ago a moment where David Tepper talked about a trade with the Houston Texans that never happened. I don't know why he brought this up, but he opened his mouth.
We had a trade to go up to 2. And it was a 3-way trade with Chicago. And we were going to go up to 2. And the Texans were going to trade up to 1. Chicago was going to be down to 2, and we were going to trade with Chicago. And so we were, you know, we were waiting. We had that trade kind of arranged on Wednesday, I think. Scott, is that the time one? I think
Wednesday.
And so, you know, we waited. You know, and you have to appreciate it. Like, I come from a world where you do trades, and I don't love when trades don't happen right away. So I'm driving Scott crazy. I have to apologize for Scott for this, by the way. I'm saying, what's going on with these guys? This doesn't feel right. What's going on? And so Wednesday goes, Thursday goes, we get into Friday, and the Texans changed their mind about the trade, about doing the trade, the 3-way trade.
TL didn't listen. He sounds meddlesome. Here's the thing, though. There is such a thing as too handsy, former Panthers owner Jerry Richardson, among other...
RIP Jeans Friday.
Aren't you wiggling them jeans? I mean, it's creepy, but it's funny. As long as you're not the one that's being told to. Watch you wriggling them jeans.
It's very, like he
I can't believe it was said.
He should have been, like, in Happy Gilmore, not in real life. Like, it's a very...
It is straight out of an Adam Sandler movie.
It's very Caddyshack.
So, I think you can be too hands-on. I think a lot of us would have made that argument with Jim Crane and some of the signings that the Astros are stuck with. Rafael Montero, Jose Abreu, maybe Ryan Presley. That's not aging so well back in January. But I also think that there's such thing as an owner that's too hands-off. And honestly, I thought that Cal McNair, picking up where his dad left off, Bob McNair, was... two hands off. That's how Jack Easterby accrued all that power. That's how they almost hired Josh McCown until, at the last second, someone stepped in. Was it Cal McNair? Was it Hannah McNair? I don't know. I don't know if anyone's ever going to know unless there's some sort of tell-all book that talks about how the Texans went from hiring Josh McCown. And by the way, if they had hired Josh McCown, I think there's a chance that they would have given him a second year. I think with Lovie Smith, it's an old coach. The team seemed uninspired. I kind of get why they fired him after 1 year. There was so much criticism about firing a coach after 1 year, but are you supposed to be patient when there's clearly no results happening? So that's where a hands-on owner can be good. I think it's possible to be too hands-off. I thought that Bob McNair made a pretty ballsy decision sticking with Gary Kubiak as long as he did, and especially sticking with Rick Smith as long as he did. In the case of Rick Smith, he shouldn't have. As former general manager of the Texans. And Kubiak, I mean, after 2010, he's lucky that he had a job. But he got 2011, he got 2012, two very good years, probably the two best seasons in Texans history, at least back-to-back. But then after that, yeah, it kind of hit the fan again. So there is such a thing as, I think, sitting back. I think a lot of people would argue with Bill O'Brien it might have lasted a little bit too long. You could have made the argument that in 2017 they could have cleaned house entirely after drafting Deshaun Watson, get rid of Rick Smith and Bill O'Brien. A lot of stuff that went on behind the scenes there. So my question is, I guess, where do you want your owner to be? Because, yeah, a meddlesome hands-on owner sucks, but the hands-off owners are terrible, and... while I'm not going to act like David Tepper knows what he's doing, I think pulling the plug on Frank Reich isn't the end of the world. I think it probably was for the best for the Panthers. What they were doing with Bryce Young clearly was not working. He was not getting better. And maybe that's a Bryce Young problem, but everyone was complaining about what Frank Reich was doing with the offense. So they fired him. Isn't that, in a way, a net good for the Panthers going forward and for Bryce Young going forward?
The reason it's bad, though, is because the guy who hired Frank Reich is going to hire the next, and he also hired Matt Rhule, is going to hire the next coach.
Correct.
The guy who, have you seen, like, their record since Tepper has taken over?
Not good.
It's terrible.
How bad?
It's horrendous.
Okay.
It's so bad. They're like one of the worst teams in all of professional sports by winning percentage.
Now, that is actually
since
surprising.
Tepper took over.
Wow.
And, yes.
They are not, as the worst team in the NFL, going to have their likely number one overall pick because they traded up so that they could get Bryce Young or C.J. Stroud.
You know who unlocked Bryce Young
when
he was in college?
Who?
Offensive coordinator for the Alabama Crimson Tide.
No. You're not going to say it, are you?
Bill O'Brien. He's
Doesn't
in the
matter.
NFL.
Doesn't matter, Sean. NFC South champions.
Right? He's already dominated a...
Southern division.
A bad Southern division. Look at the NFC South. It's terrible.
Carpetbagger coming down and taking our Southerners' jobs.
Again.
I do declare it is reprehensible that someone like Bill O'Brien from his Ivy League school will come on down here and take away a job from a hard-working man in Louisiana or Mississippi. I do declare I don't like it. It is crazy that the NFC South is like just as bad as the AFC South has been for such a long time. That would be really funny if they hired Bill O'Brien.
I don't know who they're going to – I mean, like, what? He's already done, I feel like, two, like, classic new meddlesome owner moves by hiring, like, the flashy college coach.
That's true.
Giving him a big contract.
Mm-hmm.
And then hiring, like, the retread, like, stable – this is who other owners like kind of coach, but then he forces them to have a meeting every week with them and apparently rips them in the meetings.
I imagine somebody that is this hands-on is also someone who has perhaps developed rabbit ears of sorts. And sometimes it's good to listen to the criticism against you. I don't think firing Reich was bad for the Panthers. What you said, Sean, great point. What happens next? Probably bad for the Panthers.
I think every move that he's made is bad.
It is.
This move is not bad, but it's because he hired him in the first place.
But there's a chance he learns. And I will give an owner who cans a guy, or let's say a power group, power structure like Texas A&M, who says, yeah, this ain't working. We're firing Jimbo Fisher, whatever the cost. I will give those people credit for making the tough decision. Patience does not always lead to positive results. And there's a lot of people who play armchair GM, armchair owner, armchair coach, who preach this idea of patience. You need to give a guy more time. We say that with quarterbacks all the time. People did that with Brock Osweiler his first year here with the Texans. We need to give him more time. No, the Vikings game, which I think was the fifth game of the year, that's where we all knew he sucked. That's where we all knew it. But you got to give him more time. Why? Why do you got to give him more time? He's been in the league for a while. Patience is not always good. So I think some of the people that are playing the sad little violin for Frank Reich need to chill the bleep out. I think the Panthers made a good decision moving on from him. What happens next? Totally different story in all likelihood, just given the David Tepper era thus far. But there's always hope. Hope springs eternal. It's the Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. In the college football six-pack, what's it going to take for Texas to get in the college football playoff? Did Michigan's coach cry after beating Ohio State? Who's going to get hired at UH? All of that and more. Stick around.
ESPN 97.5 on Twitch. I don't get it. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Paul Gallant. Join the conversation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776.
There's different philosophies in ownership. You know what I mean? Some owners kind of stay away and don't engage a whole lot. Other owners do. And his philosophy is he's going to engage. And listen, it's only been a short experience, but it's been a really good experience. It hasn't been fun. You know, it's not fun. Those meetings aren't, I wouldn't characterize them as fun meetings. But those meetings make me better, and I trust they make us better.
That was the voice of former Panthers head coach Frank Reich talking about his relationship with owner David Tepper in October. It hasn't been fun, but it's been good. Interesting comments from a coach who was fired just 11 games into the year. That is the shortest stint for any first-year head coach since 1978. Some guy that I've never heard of, Pete McCauley, the 49ers hired him, and they fired him after 9 games. This was before Bill Walsh. This was before the 49ers took over. I'm not sure if Walsh was the guy who stepped in the next year. All I know is, Sean, that I had never heard of Pete McCauley, and that's the only guy who's had a shorter first year than Frank Reich. And this is a conversation that includes former Jaguars head coach Urban Meyer.
That was what I was going to say. It's shocking to me that whatever Frank Reich did got him fired faster than everything that Urban Meyer did.
Yeah.
That eventually got him fired in 2021. Also, Nate Hackett also survived longer than...
How did Hackett survive?
Like, it's crazy. This is the that is the last 2 years. The last 3 years we've had someone fired under, what, 14 games, I think Urban was?
Here's the thing. This idea that Reich was going to figure it out is total crap. It's crap. When had Reich ever shown you in Indianapolis that he was special while running a team? And they threw quarterback after quarterback after quarterback at him. And the excuse I guess you could make is, well, they were all 40 years old and about to retire. Matt Ryan, Philip Rivers, etc. And Andrew Luck, of course, walked away. But what had he ever done? It's a largely uninspiring hire that the Panthers made, outside of the fact that Reich played for the expansion Panthers back in 1995. It's really the only cutesy piece of this story. So there's a lot of people that are playing sad little violins for Reich. And maybe it's because there is an idea that meddlesome owner David Tepper, who sounded rather meddlesome there when you heard that comment by Frank Reich, he wanted Bryce Young and they wanted C.J. Stroud. We saw, courtesy of Josh McCown's mother, a liked tweet by her. Some of you people have no life. We thank you for your service to Paul Gallant Show content. But Josh McCown's mom, Josh McCown, almost Houston Texans coach, was the Panthers, what, quarterback coach? Offensive coordinator? Quarterback coach. He got canned as well. Texans? A tweet. Watch the Josh McCown UD QB series, then watch the Panthers QB search videos on their YouTube. I always got the feeling the coaches wanted Stroud and the owners wanted Young. Yeah, Josh McCown was talking about playing horse with C.J. Stroud. It was a rather awkward conversation. McCown was trying to seem hip with his Ivan Drago spiked up hair. But hey, I do think that the Panthers coaching staff liked C.J. Stroud over Bryce Young. And that brings us to the conversation that I wanted to have. David Tepper, owner of the Carolina Panthers, does seem rather meddlesome. And like someone who still is learning on the job, thinks he knows everything because this is a successful businessman. This is a guy who likes to talk about stuff. Remember, there was a couple of weeks ago a moment where David Tepper talked about a trade with the Houston Texans that never happened. I don't know why he brought this up, but he opened his mouth.
We had a trade to go up to 2. And it was a three-way trade with Chicago. And we were going to go up to 2. And the Texans were going to trade up to 1. Chicago was going to be down to 2, and we were going to trade with Chicago. And so we were, you know, we were waiting. We had that trade kind of arranged on Wednesday, I think, Scott. Is that the time when? I think
Wednesday.
And so, you know, we waited. You know, you have to appreciate it. Like, I come from a world where you do trades. And I don't love when trades don't happen right away. So I'm driving Scott crazy. I have to apologize for Scott for this, by the way. I'm saying, what's going on with these guys? This doesn't feel right. What's going on? And so Wednesday goes, Thursday goes, we get into Friday, and the Texans changed their mind about the trade, about doing the trade, the three-way trade.
TL didn't listen. He sounds meddlesome. Here's the thing, though. There is such a thing as too handsy, former Panthers owner Jerry Richardson, among other...
R.I.P. Jeans Friday.
Aren't you wiggling them jeans? I mean, it's creepy, but it's funny. As long as you're not the one that's being told to, hey, watch you wiggling them jeans.
It's very, like he
I can't believe it was said.
He should have been, like, in Happy Gilmore, not in real life. Like, it's a very...
It is straight out of an Adam Sandler movie.
It's very Caddyshack.
So, I think you can be too hands-on. I think a lot of us would have made that argument with Jim Crane and some of the signings that the Astros are stuck with. Rafael Montero, Jose Abreu, maybe Ryan Presley. That's not aging so well back in January. But I also think that there's such thing as an owner that's too hands-off. And honestly, I thought that Cal McNair, picking up where his dad left off, Bob McNair, was too hands off. That's how Jack Easterby accrued all that power. That's how they almost hired Josh McCown until, at the last second, someone stepped in. Was it Cal McNair? Was it Hannah McNair? I don't know. I don't know if anyone's ever going to know unless there's some sort of tell-all book that talks about how the Texans went from hiring Josh McCown. And by the way, if they had hired Josh McCown, I think there's a chance that they would have given him a second year. I think with Lovie Smith, it's an old coach. The team seemed uninspired. I kind of get why they fired him after 1 year. There was so much criticism about firing a coach after 1 year, but are you supposed to be patient when there's clearly no results happening? So that's where a hands-on owner can be good. I think it's possible to be too hands-off. I thought that Bob McNair made a pretty ballsy decision sticking with Gary Kubiak as long as he did. And especially sticking with Rick Smith as long as he did. In the case of Rick Smith, he shouldn't have, as former general manager of the Texans. And Kubiak, I mean, after 2010, he's lucky that he had a job. But he got 2011, he got 2012, two very good years, probably the two best seasons in Texans history, at least back-to-back. But then after that, yeah, it kind of hit the fan again. So there is such a thing as, I think, sitting back. I think a lot of people would argue with Bill O'Brien it might have lasted a little bit too long. You could have made the argument that in 2017 they could have cleaned house entirely after drafting Deshaun Watson, get rid of Rick Smith and Bill O'Brien. A lot of stuff that went on behind the scenes there. So my question is, I guess, where do you want your owner to be? Because, yeah, a meddlesome hands-on owner sucks, but the hands-off owners are terrible, and while I'm not going to act like David Tepper knows what he's doing, I think pulling the plug on Frank Reich isn't the end of the world. I think it probably was for the best for the Panthers. What they were doing with Bryce Young clearly was not working. He was not getting better. And maybe that's a Bryce Young problem, but everyone was complaining about what Frank Reich was doing with the offense. So they fired him. Isn't that, in a way, a net good for the Panthers going forward and for Bryce Young going forward?
The reason it's bad, though, is because the guy who hired Frank Reich is going to hire the next. And he also hired Matt Rhule is going to hire the next coach.
Correct.
The guy who, have you seen like the record since Tepper has taken over?
Not good.
It's terrible.
How bad?
It's horrendous.
Okay.
It's so bad. They're like one of the worst teams in all of professional sports by winning percentage.
Now that is actually
since
surprising.
Tepper took over.
Wow.
And, yes.
They are not, as the worst team in the NFL, going to have their likely number one overall pick because they traded up so that they could get Bryce Young or C.J. Stroud.
You know who unlocked Bryce Young
when
he was in college?
Who?
Offensive coordinator for the Alabama Crimson Tide.
No, you're not going to say it, are you?
Bill O'Brien. He's
Doesn't
in the
matter.
NFL.
Doesn't matter, Sean. NFC South champions.
Right? He's already dominated a
Southern division.
A bad Southern division. Look at the NFC South. It's terrible.
Carpetbagger coming down and taking our Southerners' jobs.
Again.
I do declare it is reprehensible that someone like Bill O'Brien from his Ivy League school will come on down here and take away a job from a hard-working man in Louisiana or Mississippi. I do declare I don't like it. It is crazy that the NFC South is like just as bad as the AFC South has been for such a long time. That would be really funny if they hired Bill O'Brien.
I don't know who they're going to – I mean, like, what he's already done, I feel like, two, like, classic new meddlesome owner moves by hiring, like, the flashy college coach.
That's true.
Giving him a big contract.
Mm-hmm.
And then hiring, like, the retread, like, stable, this is who other owners like kind of coach. But then he forces them to have a meeting every week with them and apparently rips them in the meetings.
I imagine somebody that is this hands-on is also someone who has perhaps developed rabbit ears of sorts. And yes, sometimes it's good to listen to the criticism against you. I don't think firing Reich was bad for the Panthers. What you said, Sean, great point. What happens next? Probably bad for the Panthers.
I think every move that he's made is bad.
It is.
This move is not bad, but it's because he hired him in the first place.
But there's a chance he learns. And I will give an owner who cans a guy, or let's say a power group, power structure like Texas A&M, who says, yeah, this ain't working. We're firing Jimbo Fisher, whatever the cost. I will give those people credit for making the tough decision. Patience does not always lead to positive results. And there's a lot of people who play armchair GM, armchair owner, armchair coach, who preach this idea of patience. You need to give a guy more time. We say that with quarterbacks all the time. People did that with Brock Osweiler his first year here with the Texans. We need to give him more time. No, the Vikings game, which I think was the fifth game of the year, that's where we all knew he sucked. That's where we all knew it. But you got to give him more time. Why? Why do you got to give him more time? He's been in the league for a while. Patience is not always good. So I think some of the people that are playing the sad little violin for Frank Reich need to chill the bleep out. I think the Panthers made a good decision moving on from him. What happens next? Totally different story in all likelihood, just given the David Tepper era thus far. But there's always hope. Hope springs eternal. It's the Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. In the college football six-pack, what's it going to take for Texas to get in the college football playoff? Did Michigan's coach cry after beating Ohio State? Who's going to get hired at UH? All of that and more. Stick around.
ESPN 97.5 on Twitch. I don't get it. All six-pack.
We're going streaking through the quad and into the gymnasium. Come on, everybody!
With Paul Gallant.
Let's do it.
The big game of the weekend in college football. Michigan. Ohio State. Michigan flew a Navy spy plane for their flyover over the game in an epic move of trollsmanship. And they hung on to beat Ohio State 30-24. I can confirm that Michigan head coach, interim head coach, Sherrone Moore, did not cry after this victory. He did cry after the other game, but he didn't cry after beating Ohio State. Does this rivalry mean anything anymore? Here's Mr. Moore after the game.
Oh my gosh, coach, let me be the first to say you just won the game. Take it in and describe the emotion of this moment for you and your team.
I mean, look at it. That's what it is. Michigan University, we love you. The fans, the players, man, this is all about the players. Coach Harbaugh, we got your back, baby. We love you. That was for you, baby.
She was trying to get him to cry.
Oh, the first week against Penn State, she was trying to get him to cry.
But the first week, he did cry. I don't think she knew he was going to cry.
No, I'm saying she asked, like, both times she's like, I am looking for this guy to cry.
No doubt.
She knew that she had a mark both times.
But Mark missed on this one. I'm kind of bummed out. You know, we're not going to play this clip, but Jim Harbaugh was talking about how this rivalry is a little contrived. That kind of bums me out. I thought that Michigan-Ohio State meant something. This one was a big deal. We're two top four teams that were college football playoff aspirations.
Yeah, I don't know, like what is he talking about? Like,
I don't know.
Like,
either.
What?
I don't even want to play it.
It's like the best driver.
I think he's just saying that because he didn't get to coach in this year's game. Like, I think he's just.
And that he'd lost, like, the first 10 of them that he coached.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Sherrod Moore has a better win percentage against Ohio State.
Yeah, it's one of those things, like, a people forget thing. But, like, people. I think it's because the wins have all come post COVID and they didn't play in 2020. Yeah. So it's like the last Ohio State win was 2019. So it just feels like it's been forever, but it's
been
like before 2021. It was actually forever before Michigan won. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I like this for this rivalry though, where like one team just owns the other, and so like the fan base can just be like, "We own you."
You can't say there's no hate between the school though.
There's so much hate.
If Roman Wilson for Michigan had this to say about Ohio State's toughness and physicality.
Get a sense that they were more physical?
Definitely not. I mean, like, I told the receivers this whole week, like, you got guys back there, like, this is a thing that I thought too, like, guys who you want to put on, like, the Louis V, like, the $1,000 outfit, like, you want to act hard, but when we're out there, like, they're not hard. Like, I see the film, like, you're not tough. Like, and I don't think I'm the toughest guy in the world, but, you know, I'm out there, I'm getting physical. Like, I don't think they wanted it, like, how I wanted it.
You guys agree with that?
Yeah, I
said it. They're wearing Louis V's? Sounds like this is another school that, I don't know, those UCLA recruits could go into the locker room and steal their stuff. It's weird for a man to have a Louis V bag, right? Is that what they're talking about? Is it Louis V bags?
No, they make clothes too.
Oh, they do? Okay. I wouldn't know. I'm more of an Express guy and Levi's myself, as you can see my trucker jacket behind me.
Yes, we can.
I'm a working class man. Many people say this all the time. You know, Shorecrest Preparatory School, a working class school.
Yeah. Spirit of the cowboy lives through.
It does.
Lives through Paul.
Thank you, Pendleton Whiskey. Okay. Really quickly, let's go through all the other important games for the college football playoff. Georgia Tech made it close late against number one Georgia. Georgia, frauds? Question mark.
Oh, you actually.
I'm just asking you, Sean. No?
No,
okay.
Not frauds.
Washington beat Wazoo in a walk-off field goal, 24-21. UW, frauds?
Possible frauds.
I think they're frauds.
But, I mean, all they had to do is beat Oregon. They're not frauds.
That's
so
true.
So, I
a lot of close games this year.
I think they're frauds. I'll just say it. Let's I think they're
it.
Frauds.
Hell yeah. Florida State hung on against Florida, 24-15. Fraud. Florida sucks, God. They were winning at one point in this one. Yeah, I'm with you. The Noles are frauds.
I mean, without Jordan Travis, they are frauds. Like, they're they're not going to win any.
Bo Nix and number 6 Oregon blew out number 16 Oregon State 31-7. Oregon, frauds?
Kind of frauds. They just haven't beaten anyone. This is their first ranked win, and it's the last week of the season.
We'll talk about if they beat Washington, what that means for Texas in just a moment. Alabama held on against Auburn, 27-24. Alabama, fraud?
No, this team's incredible.
Yeah, that's true.
Any team that beat them, really.
Maybe the best in the country.
Yeah, I mean, whoever beat these guys, it's the best win in the country. Anyway, what's next?
Well, let's talk about what's next. Number 7, Texas.
Oh.
Smoked Texas Tech. I think that must have felt good considering the comments by Bob Bowlesby and some of the others saying, like, save us,
Brett
Texas
Yormark.
Tech. What was it?
Brett Yormark.
Same person. I don't know. Bruce Bowlesby, Bob Yormark.
Bob Bowlesby is the old conference commissioner.
Gotcha. Okay.
He got fired because Texas and Oklahoma left.
Oh, okay.
It's very funny.
Okay. So, Friday, Pac-12 championship, number 6, Oregon at number 4, Washington. What are you, Sean Mapes, rooting for as a UT guy?
Oregon.
Okay.
Because Oregon, or I'll explain. Because Oregon doesn't have a airtight case against Texas.
And if UW was undefeated.
Washington as an undefeated would.
Okay.
So Oregon keeps the door open.
Okay. Saturday, number 20 Oklahoma State versus number 7 Texas. Who needs to win that?
Texas needs to win this one.
Okay.
To have any hope of the playoff.
Okay. Gotcha. Number 1 Georgia against number 8 Alabama. If number 8 Alabama wins, Sean, is there a chance that they leapfrog Texas because their win against a good team came more recently than Texas's big win against Alabama?
There is a super good chance both Georgia and Alabama make the playoff if Alabama wins.
That's not good.
Yeah. Maybe Georgia doesn't make it, but, like, also...
They got to look at the resume if that's the case.
But also, like, I don't know. I don't think Alabama's going to win.
Number 3, Michigan at number 17, Iowa. Is there a chance that Iowa scores an offensive touchdown?
Oh, no. No, there isn't. I thought you were going to say win.
No.
I was going to say win. I said no. God. If you asked win, I would have said maybe. Score an offensive touchdown, I'm saying no.
Number 10, Louisville against Florida State in the ACC championship.
Must win for my Louisville Cardinals. Not just DJ BNMA's, but also my Louisville Cardinals. I am circling. Must win. I'm so glad that this game is happening at the same time as Michigan-Iowa, so I do not have to watch Michigan-Iowa. I can just watch this game. The Texas Longhorns and, by proxy, me, need the Florida State Seminoles, possibly racist nickname, to lose because we cannot have Tate Rodemaker and that.
Yes, I agree.
They barely beat Florida. And I safety told you school. This stat yesterday. Florida in the fourth quarter against FSU did not have a single offensive play that gained positive yards. And yeah. What was this final score? What was the final
it was
score?
25-16 or 20, something?
24-15.
Yeah.
So they only won by 9 when one quarter.
I know.
The other team's offense opted out.
I don't. I'm with you. We need to get Letterman jackets like DJ had of the Louisville variant. Okay. Dana Holgorsen's out at Houston. It sounds like Tulane's Willie Fritz is the front runner for the job. I saw a tweet by Randy McIlvoy of Channel 2 about an hour ago that said they're zeroing in on him. I guess UTSA's Jeff Traylor is the other alternative. Traylor is looking for more money in his football budget, but Fritz has been awesome with Tulane. And shout out to Willie Fritz, father of former KPRC sports reporter Laney Fritz. Did you know that? Fun facts, everybody.
Did not know that.
Colorado, 6 straight losses to end the year. We're not going to play Deion Sanders' speech because they finished 4-8. Did you know they only have 8 recruits for the class of 2024 right now with signing day just a couple of weeks away?
That's not good.
Not good.
Speaking of Louie, he needs some Louie.
That's true. Maybe they thought he was going to go to another school or something like that. They're waiting for that. But
I don't know.
Not great. Not great. All right, guys, we want to get a little more clarity on what the hell happened in College Station over the weekend with the Texas A&M coaching search. So we're going to bring an old friend back aboard. David Nuno, who you heard right here back in the 1560 days, now working over at Texax, is going to try to tell us what the hell happened that led to A&M going from Stoops to Elko over the course of a couple of hours. And more. We'll talk about that next. Stick around.
Get over here!
ESPN 97.5, the only Houston sports station with a bidet.
The red sun rises. Blood has been spilled this night.
Excellent.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Paul Gallant. Join the conversation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776.
There's different philosophies in ownership, you know what I mean? Some owners kind of stay away and don't engage a whole lot. Other owners do. And his philosophy is he's going to engage. And listen, it's only been a short experience, but it's been a really good experience. It hasn't been fun. You know, it's not fun. Those meetings aren't, I wouldn't characterize them as fun meetings. But those meetings make me better, and I trust they make us better.
That was the voice of former Panthers head coach Frank Reich, talking about his relationship with owner David Tepper in October. It hasn't been fun, but it's been good. Interesting comments from a coach who was fired just 11 games into the year. That is the shortest stint for any first-year head coach since 1978. Some guy that I've never heard of, Pete McCauley, the 49ers hired him, and they fired him after nine games. This was before Bill Walsh. This was before the 49ers took over. I'm not sure if Walsh was the guy who stepped in the next year. All I know is, Sean, that I had never heard of Pete McCauley, and that's the only guy who's had a shorter first year than Frank Reich. And this is a conversation that includes former Jaguars head coach Urban Meyer.
That was what I was going to say. It's shocking to me that whatever Frank Reich did got him fired faster than everything that Urban Meyer did.
Yeah.
That eventually got him fired in 2021. Also, Nate Hackett also survived longer than...
How did Hackett survive?
Like, it's crazy. This is the that is the last 2 years. The last 3 years we've had someone fired under, what, 14 games, I think, Urban was?
Here's the thing. This idea that Reich was going to figure it out is total crap. It's crap. When had Reich ever shown you in Indianapolis that he was special while running a team? And they threw quarterback after quarterback after quarterback at him. And the excuse I guess you could make is, well, they were all 40 years old and about to retire. Matt Ryan, Philip Rivers, etc. And Andrew Luck, of course, walked away. But what had he ever done? It's a largely uninspiring hire that the Panthers made, outside of the fact that Reich played for the expansion Panthers back in 1995. It's really the only cutesy piece of this story. So there's a lot of people that are playing sad little violins for Reich, and maybe it's because there is an idea that meddlesome owner David Tepper, who sounded rather meddlesome there when you heard that comment by Frank Reich, he wanted Bryce Young and they wanted C.J. Stroud. We saw, courtesy of Josh McCown's mother, a liked tweet by her. Some of you people have no life. We thank you for your service to Paul Gallant Show content, but Josh McCown's mom, Josh McCown, almost Houston Texans coach, was the Panthers, what, quarterback coach? Offensive coordinator? Quarterback coach. He got canned as well. Texans? Huh? A tweet. Watch the Josh McCown UD QB series, then watch the Panthers QB search videos on their YouTube. I always got the feeling the coaches wanted Stroud and the owners wanted Young. Yeah, Josh McCown was talking about playing horse with C.J. Stroud. It was a rather awkward conversation. McCown was trying to seem hip with his Ivan Drago spiked up hair. But hey, I do think that the Panthers coaching staff liked C.J. Stroud over Bryce Young. And that brings us to the conversation that I wanted to have. David Tepper, owner of the Carolina Panthers, does seem rather meddlesome. And like someone who still is learning on the job, thinks he knows everything because this is a successful businessman. This is a guy who likes to talk about stuff. Remember, there was a couple of weeks ago a moment where David Tepper talked about a trade with the Houston Texans that never happened. I don't know why he brought this up, but he opened his mouth.
We had a trade to go up to two, and it was a three-way trade with Chicago. And we were going to go up to two, and the Texans were going to trade up to one. Chicago was going to be down to two, and we were going to trade with Chicago. And so we were, you know, we were waiting. We had that trade kind of arranged on Wednesday, I think. Scott, is that the time one? I think
Wednesday.
And so, you know, we waited. You know, and you have to appreciate it. Like, I come from a world where you do trades, and I don't love when trades don't happen right away. So I'm driving Scott crazy. I have to apologize to Scott for this, by the way. I'm saying, what's going on with these guys? This doesn't feel right. What's going on? And so Wednesday goes, Thursday goes, we get into Friday, and the Texans changed their mind about the trade, about doing the trade, the three-way trade.
TL didn't listen. He sounds meddlesome. Here's the thing, though. There is such a thing as to Hansy, former Panthers owner Jerry Richardson, among other.
RIP Jeans Friday.
Why don't you wiggling them jeans? I mean, it's creepy, but it's funny. As long as you're not the one that's being told to. Hey, why don't you wiggling them jeans?
It's very like. I can't believe it was said. He should have been like in Happy Gilmore, not in real life. Like it's a very.
It is straight out of an Adam Sandler movie.
It's very Caddyshack.
So, I think you can be too hands on. I think a lot of us would have made that argument with Jim Crane and some of the signings that the Astros are stuck with. Rafael Montero, Jose Abreu, maybe Ryan Presley. That's not aging so well. Back in January, but I also think that there's such thing as an owner that's too hands off. And honestly, I thought that Cal McNair picking up where his dad left off, Bob McNair, was too hands off. That's how Jack Easterby accrued all that power. That's how they almost hired Josh McCown until at the last second someone stepped in. Was it Cal McNair? Was it Hannah McNair? I don't know. I don't know if anyone's ever going to know unless there's some sort of tell-all book that talks about how the Texans went from hiring Josh McCown. And by the way, if they had hired Josh McCown, I think there's a chance that they would have given him a second year. I think with Lovie Smith, it's an old coach. The team seemed uninspired. I kind of get why they fired him after 1 year. There was so much criticism about firing a coach after 1 year, but are you supposed to be patient when there's clearly no results happening? So that's where a hands-on owner can be good. I think it's possible to be too hands-off. I thought that Bob McNair made a pretty ballsy decision sticking with Gary Kubiak as long as he did, and especially sticking with Rick Smith as long as he did. In the case of Rick Smith, he shouldn't have, as former general manager of the Texans. And Kubiak, I mean, after 2010, he's lucky that he had a job. But he got 2011, he got 2012, two very good years, probably the two best seasons in Texans history, at least back-to-back. But then after that, yeah, it kind of hit the fan again. So there is such a thing as, I think, sitting back. I think a lot of people would argue with Bill O'Brien it might have lasted a little bit too long. You could have made the argument that in 2017 they could have cleaned house entirely after drafting Deshaun Watson, get rid of Rick Smith and Bill O'Brien. A lot of stuff that went on behind the scenes there. So my question is, I guess, where do you want your owner to be? Because, yeah, a meddlesome hands-on owner sucks, but the hands-off owners are terrible. And while I'm not going to act like David Tepper knows what he's doing, I think pulling the plug on Frank Reich isn't the end of the world. I think it probably was for the best for the Panthers. What they were doing with Bryce Young clearly was not working. He was not getting better. And maybe that's a Bryce Young problem, but everyone was complaining about what Frank Reich was doing with the offense. So they fired him. Isn't that, in a way, a net good for the Panthers going forward and for Bryce Young going forward?
The reason it's bad, though, is because the guy who hired Frank Reich is going to hire the next. And he also hired Matt Rhule, is going to hire the next coach.
Correct.
The guy who, have you seen like the record since Tepper has taken over?
Not good.
It's terrible.
How bad?
It's horrendous.
Okay.
It's so bad. They're like one of the worst teams in all of professional sports by winning percentage.
Now that is actually
since
surprising.
Tepper took over.
Wow.
And, yes.
They are not, as the worst team in the NFL, going to have their likely number one overall pick because they traded up so that they could get Bryce Young or C.J. Stroud.
You know who unlocked Bryce Young
when
he was in college?
Who?
Offense coordinator for the Alabama Crimson Tide.
No, you're not going to say it, are you?
Bill O'Brien.
NFL. Doesn't matter, Sean. NFC South champions.
Right? He's already dominated a
Southern division.
A bad Southern division. Look at the NFC South. It's terrible.
Carpetbagger coming down and taking our Southerners' jobs.
Again.
I do declare it is reprehensible that someone like Bill O'Brien from his Ivy League school will come on down here and take away a job from a hard-working man in Louisiana or Mississippi. I do declare I don't like it. It is crazy that the NFC South is like just as bad as the AFC South has been for such a long time. That would be really funny if they hired Bill O'Brien.
I don't know who they're going to – I mean, like, what? He's already done, I feel like, two, like, classic new meddlesome owner moves by hiring like the flashy college coach.
That's true.
Giving him a big contract.
Mm-hmm.
And then hiring like the retread, like stable, this is who other owners like kind of coach. But then he forces them to have a meeting every week with them and apparently rips them in the meetings.
I imagine somebody that is this hands-on is also someone who has perhaps developed rabbit ears of sorts. And yes. Sometimes it's good to listen to the criticism against you. I don't think firing Reich was bad for the Panthers. What you said, Sean, great point. What happens next? Probably bad for the Panthers.
I think every move that he's made is bad.
It is.
This move is not bad, but it's because he hired him in the first place.
But there's a chance he learns. And I will give an owner who cans a guy, or let's say a power group, power structure like Texas A&M, who says, yeah, this ain't working. We're firing Jimbo Fisher, whatever the cost. I will give those people credit for making the tough decision. Patience does not always lead to positive results. And there's a lot of people who play armchair GM, armchair owner, armchair coach, who preach this idea of patience. You need to give a guy more time. We say that with quarterbacks all the time. People did that with Brock Osweiler his first year here with the Texans. We need to give him more time. No, the Vikings game, which I think was the fifth game of the year, that's where we all knew he sucked. That's where we all knew it. But you got to give him more time. Why? Why do you got to give him more time? He's been in the league for a while. Patience is not always good. So I think some of the people that are playing the sad little violin for Frank Reich need to chill the bleep out. I think the Panthers made a good decision moving on from him. What happens next? Totally different story in all likelihood, just given the David Tepper era thus far. But there's always hope. Hope springs eternal. It's the Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. In the college football six-pack, what's it going to take for Texas to get in the college football playoff? Did Michigan's coach cry after beating Ohio State? Who's going to get hired at UH? All of that and more. Stick around.
ESPN 97.5 on Twitch. I don't get it. All six-pack.
We're going streaking through the quad and into the gymnasium. Come on, everybody!
With Paul Gallant.
Let's do it.
The big game of the weekend in college football. Michigan. Ohio State. Michigan flew a Navy spy plane for their flyover over the game in an epic move of trollsmanship. And they hung on to beat Ohio State 30-24. I can confirm that Michigan head coach, interim head coach, Sherrone Moore, did not cry after this victory. He did cry after the other game, but he didn't cry after beating Ohio State. Does this rivalry mean anything anymore? Here's Mr. Moore after the game.
Oh my gosh, coach, let me be the first to say you just won the game. Take it in and describe the emotion of this moment for you and your team.
I mean, look at it. That's what it is. Michigan University, we love you. The fans, the players, man, this is all about the players. Coach Harbaugh, we got your back, baby. We love you. That was for you, baby.
She was trying to get him to cry.
Oh, the first week against Penn State, she was trying to get him to cry.
But the first week he did cry. I don't think she knew he was going to cry.
No, I'm saying she asked, like, both times she's like, I am looking for this guy to cry.
No doubt.
She knew that she had a mark both times.
But Mark missed. On this one, I'm kind of bummed out. You know, we're not going to play this clip, but Jim Harbaugh was talking about how this rivalry is a little contrived. That kind of bums me out. I thought Michigan Ohio State meant something. This one was a big deal. We're two top four teams that were college football playoff aspirations.
Yeah, I don't know. What is he talking about?
I don't know.
Like what?
I don't even want to play it.
It's like the best rivalry.
I think he's just saying that because he didn't get to coach in this year's game. Like, I think he's just...
And that he'd lost, like, the first 10 of them that he coached.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Sherrone Moore has a better win percentage against Ohio State.
Yeah, it's one of those things, like, a people forget thing. But, like, people... I think it's because the wins have all come post-COVID and they didn't play in 2020. Yeah. So it's like the last Ohio State win was 2019. So it just feels like it's been forever, but it's
been
like
a while.
Before 2021. It was actually forever before Michigan won. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I like this for this rivalry though, where like one team just owns the other, and so like the fan base can just be like, "We own you."
You can't say there's no hate between the school though.
So much hate.
If Roman Wilson for Michigan had this to say about Ohio State's toughness and physicality.
Get a sense that they were more physical?
Definitely not. I mean, like, I told the receivers this whole week, like, you got guys back there, like, this is the thing that I thought too, like, guys who you want to put on, like, the Louis V, like, the $1,000 outfit, like, you want to act hard, but when we're out there, like, they're not hard. Like, I see the film, like, you're not tough. Like, and I don't think I'm the toughest guy in the world, but, you know, I'm out there, I'm getting physical. Like, I don't think they wanted it, like, how I wanted it.
You guys agree with that?
Yeah, I get it.
They're wearing Louis V's? Sounds like this is another school that, I don't know, those UCLA recruits could go into the locker room and steal their stuff. It's weird for a man to have a Louis V bag, right? Is that what they're talking about? Is it Louis V bags?
No, they make clothes too.
Oh, they do? Okay. I wouldn't know. I'm more of an Express guy and Levi's myself, as you can see my trucker jacket behind me.
Yes, we can.
I'm a working class man. Many people say this all the time. You know, Shorecrest Preparatory School, a working class school.
Yeah. Spirit of the cowboy lives through.
It does.
Lives through Paul.
Thank you, Pendleton Whiskey. Okay. Really quickly, let's go through all the other important games for the college football playoff. Georgia Tech made it close late against number one Georgia. Georgia, frauds? Question mark?
Oh, you actually.
I'm just asking you, Sean. No?
No,
okay.
Not frauds.
Washington beat Wazoo in a walk-off field goal, 24-21. UW, frauds?
Possible frauds.
I think they're frauds.
But, I mean, all they had to do is beat Oregon. They're not frauds.
That's
so
true.
So, I
a lot of close games this year.
I think they're frauds. I'll just say it. Let's I think they're
it.
Frauds.
Hell yeah. Florida State hung on against Florida, 24-15. Fraud. Florida sucks, God. They were winning at one point in this one. Yeah, I'm with you. The Noles are frauds.
I mean, without Jordan Travis, they are frauds. Like, they're they're not going to win any.
Bo Nix and number 6 Oregon blew out number 16 Oregon State 31-7. Oregon, frauds?
Kind of frauds. They just haven't beaten anyone. Like, this is their first ranked win, and it's the last week of the season.
We'll talk about if they beat Washington, what that means for Texas in just a moment. Alabama held on against Auburn, 27-24. Alabama, fraud?
No, this team's incredible.
Yeah, that's
any,
true.
Any team that beat them, really.
Maybe the best in the country.
Yeah, I mean, whoever beat these guys, it's the best win in the country. Anyway, what's next?
Well, let's talk about what's next. Number 7, Texas.
Oh.
Smoked Texas Tech. I think that must have felt good considering the comments by Bob Bowlesby and some of the others saying, like, save us,
Brett
Texas
Yormark.
Tech. What was it?
Brett Yormark.
Same person. I don't know. Bruce Bowlesby, Bob Yormark.
Bob Bowlesby is the old conference commissioner.
Gotcha. Okay.
He got fired because Texas and Oklahoma left.
Oh, okay.
It's very funny.
Okay. So, Friday, Pac-12 championship, number 6, Oregon at number 4, Washington. What are you, Sean Mapes, rooting for as a UT guy?
Oregon.
Okay.
Because Oregon, or I'll explain. Because Oregon doesn't have a airtight case against Texas.
And if UW was undefeated.
Washington as an undefeated would.
Okay.
So Oregon keeps the door open.
Okay. Saturday, number 20 Oklahoma State versus number 7 Texas. Who needs to win that?
Texas needs to win this one.
Okay.
To have any hope of the playoff.
Okay. Gotcha. Number 1 Georgia against number 8 Alabama. If number 8 Alabama wins, Sean, is there a chance that they leapfrog Texas because their win against a good team came more recently than Texas's big win against Alabama?
There is a super good chance both Georgia and Alabama make the playoff if Alabama wins.
That's not good.
Yeah. Maybe Georgia doesn't make it, but, like, also...
They got to look at the resume if that's the case.
But also, like, I don't know. I don't think Alabama's going to win.
Number 3, Michigan at number 17, Iowa. Is there a chance that Iowa scores an offensive touchdown?
Oh, no. No, there isn't. I thought you were going to say win.
No.
I was going to say win. I said
go
no.
On.
If you asked win, I would have said maybe. Score an offensive touchdown, I'm saying no.
Number 10, Louisville against Florida State in the ACC Championship.
Must win for my Louisville Cardinals. Not just DJ BNMA's, but also my Louisville Cardinals. I am circling. Must win. I'm so glad that this game is happening at the same time as Michigan-Iowa, so I do not have to watch Michigan-Iowa. I can just watch this game. The Texas Longhorns and, by proxy, me, need the Florida State Seminoles, possibly racist nickname, to lose. Because we cannot have Tate Rodemaker, and
I agree.
They barely beat Florida, and I told you school. This stat yesterday. Florida in the fourth quarter against FSU did not have a single offensive play that gained positive yards. And what was the final score? What was the final score?
25-16 or
24-15.
Yeah.
So they only won by 9 when one quarter.
The other team's
offense opted out.
I'm with you. We need to get Letterman jackets like DJ had of the Louisville variant. Okay. Dana Holgorsen's out at Houston. It sounds like Tulane's Willie Fritz is the front runner for the job. I saw a tweet by Randy McIlvoy of Channel 2 about an hour ago that said they're zeroing in on him. I guess UTSA's Jeff Traylor is the other alternative. Traylor is looking for more money in his football budget, but Fritz has been awesome with Tulane. And shout out to Willie Fritz, father of former KPRC sports reporter Laney Fritz. Did you know that? Fun facts, everybody.
Did not know that.
Colorado, 6 straight losses to end the year. We're not going to play Deion Sanders' speech because they finished 4-8. Did you know they only have 8 recruits for the class of 2024 right now with signing day just a couple of weeks away?
That's not good.
Not good.
Speaking of Louis, he needs some Louis.
That's true. Maybe they thought he was going to go to another school or something like that. They're waiting for that. But
I don't know.
Not great. Not great. All right, guys. We want to get a little more clarity on what the hell happened in College Station over the weekend with the Texas A&M coaching search. So we're going to bring an old friend back aboard. David Nuno, who you heard right here back in the 1560 days, now working over at Texax, is going to try to tell us what the hell happened that led to A&M going from Stoops to Elko over the course of a couple of hours. And more. We'll talk about that next. Stick around.
Get over here!
ESPN 97.5, the only Houston sports station with a bidet.
The red sun rises. Blood has been spilled this night.
Excellent. Back to the Paul Gallant Show, coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
And joining me right now on the HRNP guest line, you used to hear him here on 1560 back in the day. You used to see him on Channel 13. He is now at Texags, the one and only David Nuno. David, it's been way too long. Good to hear from you, man.
Pablo Galante, what's up, buddy? How you been?
I am doing very well. Now, I wonder how you are doing because you had quite the long Thanksgiving weekend. I took off on a plane on Saturday night coming back from Tampa Bay thinking that the next head coach of the Texas A&M Aggies was going to be Mark Stoops. I got off the plane. It's not Mark Stoops. All sorts of things had happened in between that. It seemed like there was a revolt by fans, by players, and now Mike Elko is the head coach introduced yesterday of the Aggies. How did we get here?
Well, a couple things. I don't think the insurrection that occurred on Saturday night, and that's what it felt like, is the complete reason Mark Stoops is not here. But it certainly played a part in it. Look, I think the biggest reason fans and, you know, insiders were kind of disappointed in the potential hiring of Mark Stoops. Look, Mark Stoops is a good coach, and with A&M's resources, he might win, right? This is not necessarily an indictment on him per se, but I feel like he represents old-school football. And there's nothing wrong with old-school football, but we just had old-school football with Jimbo Fisher. We had a guy in his mid-50s who was getting you 8-4, 7-5, 5-7, and, you know, with an offense that was archaic, and you're replacing him with a guy whose offense hasn't been that good the last couple years, and it kind of represents that old school. When there's a coaching change, and let's remember the days from the Texans, from Gary to Bill O'Brien to whatever, you want kind of a different feel to obviously D'Amico now, who is filling all those needs. You want somebody to be different than what you just had. And it felt like Mark Stoops was similar in at least the approach of being an older style of football. Now, you could say, well, Mike Elko is, you know, is a disciple of Jimbo Fisher. Isn't he the same thing? And I would say no. Not only he also, you know, worked under Brian Kelly. The thing is with Coach Elko, he's younger than I am. He's 46 years old. He may look a little older, but that guy is still a young guy. He's definitely adapted with the game. He's a guy that I remember when I first got to Texas back in 2021. People were like, this dude's going to be a head coach. And what he did at Duke with those resources, they recruited around 60th in the country, right? And they were super competitive in the ACC in a year where the ACC had a really good year. And the SEC, for the most part, was down. For the most part, right? Not all across, but for the most part. What he's been able to do there, and this year they lost a bunch of one-score games with their backup quarterback. It just feels right. Mark Stoops didn't feel right to me. But, you know, I would have been intrigued by it. But he's not the guy that I wanted. Fans wanted to hold out hope for Kalen DeBoer or Ryan Day. But this guy just makes sense. He knows the players. He knows the area. He knows how to recruit. He already said the right things in the press conference yesterday, endearing himself to the Texas high school coaches. It just feels right. It's coming back and with a bigger platform, and I think he's going to do wonderful here.
David Nuno of Texags with me on the HR&P guest line. That's a much better explanation than I could think of the difference between Stoops and Elko, because to me, outside looking in, I didn't really see that much of one, but the idea of old school versus new school, okay, I can get behind that. I do wonder, though, how much of this hiring process, how much of it was also focusing on trying to keep as many players from transferring away as possible, because this was a guy who was at A&M fairly recently.
I'm sure that plays a part, absolutely, right? When you got a guy that, I mean, look at the outpouring of support that he got from current players and former players, right? This guy is beloved in this community. And look, A&M has not hired a defensive-minded head coach since R.C. Slocum. So we're talking about a lot of offensive guys who have failed at A&M. They may have had moments of brilliance, but they have failed. Francione failed. Mike Sherman did not live up to what they wanted him to be. Kevin Sumlin, flash, a couple of great years. Then they fizzled in November after that. Jimbo Fisher had a great 2020. So they're going back to their core. But the main thing is, yeah, in today's college football world, you would like to keep your core group together. But you need to keep the right core group. Jimbo Fisher was an incredible, incredible recruiter. And I really thought it was going to work. And it probably could have worked had he figured out the offensive line. But he's a little too stubborn, man. I don't think he had the strongest staff at times. And certain areas were strong. Mike Elko was certainly a strong personality to have on that staff a couple years back. But he did not have the strongest staff. The offensive line was decimated. And you can't recruit at the level A&M was recruiting at and have an offensive line or blocking in general that didn't protect your quarterbacks. Five starting quarterbacks lost their seasons in the last 3 years. Like, they lost Haynes King twice. They lost Max Johnson twice. And by the way, they lost Connor Wigman, the future. So all that being said, you can't have that, and that to me was the demise of Jimbo Fisher. Plus, he didn't involve with the game.
There is a part of me that wonders if Jimbo Fisher would still be around if Connor Wegman hadn't been hurt. And it was interesting to see the rapidness with which Texas A&M moved on from him. I know they've been getting a lot of crap, David, and I imagine seeing that, you do want to defend them. But I actually think that they deserve some credit for having the cojones to pull out the wall and say, F it, we're just going to get rid of him. But on the other side of things, there's a part of me that comes away from this weekend looking at athletic director Ross Bjork and wondering why he's still around. Because it doesn't really feel like this weekend it was very clean with the way that they did it. And it does seem that he did want to bring Mark Stoops in over anybody else.
Well, let's play this out, because I understand that. That's a very popular thought. But do you not give him credit for what he's done with basketball? He didn't hire Buzz Williams, but he did hire Joni Taylor to be the women's basketball coach, up-and-comer. Jim Schlossnagel took them to a College World Series. This was a Ross Bjork hire. Trisha Ford on the softball side seems to be awesome. Jamie Morrison got them back into the tournament. He's a Ross Bjork hire. Brian Corton, men's golf. Like, I'm doing a lot of name-dropping for your audience that may not know what I'm talking about, but he has done an excellent job outside of football. And by the way, Jimbo Fisher hired him. He was not the athletic director when Jimbo Fisher was hired. So I know Saturday night didn't play well, but here's part of the story too. How about just really good reporting is why we know everything that happened. You know, Billy Lucci, who's our owner and obviously the face of TxDAQ, if we didn't have all the information he was reporting, we wouldn't have known that Mark Stoops was going to come out there. And I know the good folks at KSR in Kentucky had that story as well. But, like, really good reporting is why these kind of things do happen. And we found out that he wanted to go with Mark Stoops. All right, well, if that's what he wanted to go with, and then the insurrection with the fans and also the Board of Regents and then him actually asking questions and then maybe Mark Stoops getting a little bit of cold feet after seeing his response, they ended up at the right spot. So however you got there, if you think that one night is the reason for firing him, I don't see it that way right now. I think they got the right guy. And by the way, can we give him a little credit on that contract? Because that contract is going to be the new wave of college football. It is an incentive-based contract. That's exactly what they did to where you have to – like Jimbo Fisher was paid at A&M like he won a national championship at Florida State, not at Texas A&M. For Mike Elko to be paid the way that Jimbo Fisher was, he's going to have to prove it. And that's why he gets these add-ons, $1 million for making the college football playoffs, $1.5 million to the quarterfinals, another $2 million for advancing to the semifinals, advance to the college football championship game, $2.5 million. If he wins it all, an additional $3.5 million. That is, to me, one of the brilliance of this whole deal. He's laid it out there. He said, this is what we're going to do. And then a coach did agree to it.
David Nuño of TxDAQ with me talking about the hiring of Mike Elko as the next head coach of Texas A&M football. Paul Galancho of ESPN 97.5. And 92.5. To go back to the reporting you were talking about, how close were they to making Mark Stoops the guy? Were they at the 1 yard line, or was this maybe a little bit further off? Because what I heard you say a little bit ago is that Bjork was interested in Mark Stoops. Was it maybe not as close as we all thought it may have been on Saturday night?
I think it was at the 1 yard line. I do. But I'm going to tell you right now, like, Mike Elko was always, if not 1A, 1B throughout this entire process. So you would hear names like Kalen DeBoer. Well, if Washington loses this weekend, you know, they're going to make a real pitch to Kalen DeBoer. If Ohio State loses to Michigan, which they ended up doing, maybe they'll make a pitch to Ryan Day. So there's these big names that were out there that were super intriguing. I do know that it was very important for Ross to get a defensive-minded head coach with a blue-collar mentality. And by the way, I understand like people who think Elko and Stoops are very similar, and they are because they're both defensive-minded people. And I heard a Kentucky radio station yesterday say, yeah, Elko is very similar to Stoops, except he hasn't accomplished what Stoops has.
That's what I
thought.
And
that is that's true. But what is Mike Elko doing at Duke, right? Like, we're talking again, and by the way, Stoops did that with Kentucky. But Stoops did that at Kentucky, and let's be very honest, the down division in the SEC, right? For the last few years, like, is Georgia and who else? Like, Missouri had an amazing year this year. They're in the mix. Tennessee had a good year last year. This year they were okay. But you get Vandy every year? Come on. You know, like, Florida's been down the last few years. Like, so I guess my point is, I think Mark Stoops would have worked at Texas A&M. But now let's talk about fit and feel, right? And then it goes back to that first question you asked me, which was, you know, how much did the players – you know, buying in, play a part. It should play a part, right? Like, again, not that fans should decide who the head coach is, but look at the reception that D'Amico Ryans got from the Texans fans. And that's without any of us knowing what kind of head coach he would be. That's with a limited, as a defensive coordinator with the 49ers. We just love that dude. Sometimes the right answer is right in front of you. D'Amico Ryans was the right answer. And look at the change in the culture and the optimism and the hope of the Texans. Well, A&M is hoping and banking on Mike Elko gives you those same kind of feels. Different history at A&M than D'Amico had. But if you see my point, there's everybody who's come around Mike Elko is all in. And if you saw that press conference yesterday, you're like, this guy gets it. He's blue collar, and I think he's not about the flash and the substance. He's about the work. Again, at the end of the day, it's about results. So I'm sick of talking about the what ifs, and I said that going into this year. I don't know how A&M's going to be. I think they got talent to win 9 or 10 games, but it's about what if, and I don't want to play what if. I want results, and I think Mike Elko's about that life.
David, I have one last question for you. It's been a while since the Aggies have been more than an 8-win program. As Ross Bjork said, this program is more than an 8-win program. It's been since I moved here, which is in 2011. I moved here right before the last game between Texas and Texas A&M, which thankfully that is back. It's going to be next November 30th. There have been the 11-2 season and 9-4 seasons with Manziel, 9-4 in 18, 9-1 in 2020. So the results don't indicate that of late, but we have seen in the past, obviously, that this program, at least in the Big 12, was capable of reaching pretty big heights, especially in the early 90s and into like 1998 or so. What are the realistic expectations? Obviously, people are going to make fun of what the Aggies are looking for. Listen, every program should be shooting for as many wins as possible. You should never settle. But what are the expectations going forward now that Elko's aboard? Because with Jimbo, they were at a height because of what he was getting paid that probably was never going to be reached just because of all the pressure that you put on a guy when you pay him that much.
Well, I'm going to answer this a couple different ways. I find it humorous that people get upset with expectations. Like, oh, how dare A&M think that they can win 10 games? They're 8-4. The Astros, for a long time, weren't doing anything. Right? The Texas Rangers this year came into the season as a team that had never done it. Why are they spending all this money? And they won the World Series. Look, they haven't proven it enough. There's no doubt about that. But they have the facilities. They have the resources. They have the passion. They definitely have the fans, right? I mean, you had 104,000 people there from Mississippi State, two really bad teams going at it. Like, come on, guys. Like, this is a different place, right? So I say that to you in that it's hard to tell you what my expectations are for Mike Elko because I don't know who's in, who's out, right? This new world of transfer portal. I do think A&M should aspire to be and can be and should have been with Jimbo Fisher, a team that every year flirts with 9 or 10 wins. That's who they should be. They have not been. And, you know, we want to compare ourselves. No, we don't. People like to compare how Texas is doing this year. Texas is doing fantastic, and I think their victory against Alabama should be applauded. But Texas has also had some bad years over the last decade, right? Like, it is hard to get it right. And, oh, by the way, that was in the Big 12 where – I'm sorry, it's not the same level of competition. This year you might be able to make the argument about the SEC having some really down teams. So I'm saying all that and saying they should aspire to be 9 or 10 wins every year, right? That's what they should be. Just like Georgia for a long time did not break through, right? And then when they finally broke through, everyone's like, look at here. Same with Clemson, right? So A&M should aspire for the 9 or 10 wins every single year. And I love that that's where they're going. And if you can fire a coach who, by the way, hasn't won a road game in 10, or I guess he wasn't here for the last one, but basically hadn't won a road game since the Missouri game in 2021, which is the week after they beat Alabama 41-38. Like you move on from that, and people can laugh at all the money. Oregon, for a long time, was throwing money with no splash. So my point is there should be high expectations because of the resources, because of the talent that you can recruit here. Now they just got to go do it. So can I tell you what their record's going to be next year today? No. I can't. But if they keep Connor Wigman and they learn how to freaking block, they do those two things, I think they're going to be pretty darn good, especially with the schedule that they have next year. They open up with Notre Dame. They've got Texas at home. It's not going to be a cakewalk by any stretch, but I think they can be a 9 or 10 win team, but they got to figure out the freaking offensive line. They cannot let quarterbacks get hurt, and that's what they've done for three straight seasons.
That's David Nuno. You can catch all his great work at Tex Ags. David, great to catch up, man. Let's do it again soon.
Let's do it, man. Thanks again for having me, Paul.
Anytime.
And by the way, let's not forget, like 15 years ago, I said you were going to be a star, man. You're doing great.
Thank you. I personally feel like I could be doing better. I could be doing a little better.
Yeah, we all can. Yeah,
appreciate you, dude. That is David Nuño. Always been a big fan of him from his days back in 1560. Up next, garbage time, and we'll talk about the NBA Cup. The cup of life. First, though, I got to tell you about my friends at Pendleton Whiskey. There's no better way to watch the play-in tournament. I'm not calling it that. What is it called? The NTT, whatever it is. No, we're not. The in-season tournament, the IST. There's stupid acronyms for it. We're calling it the NBA Cup because it's cooler like that. Guys, I'm going to be watching the Rockets in the NBA Cup with a little Pendleton Whiskey. You know, guys? The Pendleton Roundup is defined what it means to be a cowboy. It's not just wearing a trucker jacket like I do now. It's also a spirit born in Pendleton whiskey, which captures the unique spirit of the American West in every bottle and honors the enduring legacy of it. It's made with the finest northern grains, cut with Mount Hood glacier water. Drop a rock in. Two fingers. That's my way to go. With Pendleton Whiskey, a whiskey that celebrates the cowboy in all of us. That's Pendleton Whiskey. That's true Western tradition.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Hear your family.
Look at our family now.
Hell yeah, dude.
Back to the Paul Gallant Show. Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
This was such a banger. Sing it, Ricky! Now is the time. Don't ever stop. Rockets got NBA comebacks tonight. I'm not calling it the IST. Come on, Ricky. In your soul. Take control. If you really want it. Come on now.
This is a great music video.
It is. Do you really want it? Do you really want it?
Fair to have.
Do you really want it? Olé! Olé! We're going to celebrate. Rockets got to win. Rockets Mavs in the NBA Cup of Life. Olé, olé, olé indeed. So the NBA Cup, I'll be honest, I don't know how it works. You play, what, four games? You want to win those four games. If you don't, the tiebreaker is head-to-head if you don't win all four. And then after that, it's point differential. So what's been happening the last couple of games is you've seen players complaining about having to play to the final whistle of the NBA Cup because of the point differential tiebreaker. DeMar DeRozan's got ejected from a game last night for pushing back on it. He said, well, if I was in that situation, I was up big at the end and I was thinking about point differential, I wouldn't. I would just dribble out the clock. Okay, play out the game. It's 48 minutes. It's a 48-minute game. Is it that hard to play to the end? Is it really that hard? Sub yourself out if you're going to bitch and moan about the end of a game and a team trying to increase their point differential. Jason Tatum did this as well. We have these guys talking about what we can and can't say as fans in the arena, and these effers won't even finish a game in the NBA Cup of Life. Olé, olé, olé. It's ridiculous.
It shows why the in-season tournament, is necessary.
Yes!
What Jason Tatum said, what DeMar DeRozan said, That's why it matters. We can't just be playing out the string of these games, and that's why the in-season tournament, the setup of it is good to incentivize point differential so you get teams trying hard. Olé, olé, olé.
Sean, do they hate their job? Do they just hate playing basketball? Basketball players seem so miserable. How are you miserable? These contracts are guaranteed. You don't even have to play every game.
And just to clarify, because you said you don't know how it works, basically, the Rockets win and in. They are 2-1 in West Group B.
Okay.
They should name these something else.
I know, right?
The New Orleans Pelicans are currently 3-1. So they have already played all four games. They are 3-1. But the Rockets have a head-to-head win against the Pelicans. I think that was the Rockets' first game in the in-season tournament. Mm-hmm. So they go to Dallas to play the Dallas Mavericks, who are already eliminated. They're 1-2 in the group.
They got nothing to play for.
It still is a regular season game for them.
Oh, that's true.
And it's such a regular season game, by the way. The Mavs in-season tournament court, does not work. For whatever reason, they cannot use it. So they're going to be playing this do-or-die in-season tournament game on just the regular Dallas Mavericks court. It's BS. This isn't the IST I grew up watching. Of course, it happens to the Dallas Mavericks where their freaking court doesn't work. And they have, like, at least their court, I think, is blue. So at least it'll look better on TV than red. So that's a bit of a downer. But it is win and in.
Hell yeah.
The first time since Game 7 against OKC, the Rockets can play a game where if they win, they actually get something.
Here we go!
Ole, ole, ole!
The cup of life! Let's go. A really quick garbage time story. Two cross-country skiers froze their penis in the same race.
Huh.
One of them had to spend 10 minutes heating his appendage in a tent where competitors warm up post-race.
How's that the only thing that gets frozen?
It's hanging from your bot.
But isn't it warm? Okay.
It hurts so damn much. It's terrible. I'm lucky that I'm going to have my second child because this is going to be difficult in the future if I am going to continue like this. Those who know. Another player, cross-country skier who needed treatment, had frozen his penis during the Beijing Olympics, and he did it again during this cross-country race. Cross-country skiing sounds terrible.
Did you see the quote from the second guy?
It's bad.
That's the full quote. It's all you need to know.
All you need to know. That's going to wrap up today's show. Connor and Beard are up next. So long. Farewell. Have yourselves a wonderful Tuesday. Peace.